Luke. We'll start in the beginning. The first section will be the first four verses of Luke, and then we'll just kind of briefly look at the very end at Luke 24. But it'll start with Luke 1 with that. So we, sorry, my throat is going to be causing me some issues. Oh, no, I'm good. That'll be even stranger. Talking with a cough drop in my mouth. We've been working through different difficulties. People have different doubts, different issues, different struggles that people have with Christianity. Maybe you have them, or your friends have them, or other people have them. We've talked about science and Christianity, how they relate to each other. Did Jesus really rise from the dead? We're going to talk as well about, like, isn't Christianity socially divisive? Does it actually pull people together? I'm going to talk about the wrath of God. Like, how can he be loving and yet wrathful at the same time? Tonight, we're talking about, is the Bible reliable? Can you actually trust it? Can you lean on it? And I just want to preface and say this. I'm aiming for a Goldilocks situation, meaning not too hot, not too cold, but just right. For some of you, this is going to be too much. It's just going to be like a data dump, and you're not going to like that. For some of you, it's just not going to be enough. You're actually going to want more. My hope is that we land somewhere just right for you. But wherever you end up landing on that, talk to me more about this. This topic is enormous. There's so much to it. I can give you like 10 books to read like on this topic tomorrow and stuff to look up online or whatever else. But let's talk more about it. This question's important, though, for two reasons. There's many reasons why, but two reasons I'll say is one, The impact of Christianity is so large. So currently it is the biggest religion on the planet. It's impacted more cultures and more places geographically. It's the most ethnically diverse and honestly the most impactful religion on this earth. So whether you agree with it or not, we should at least, the sheer impact of Christianity kind of demands us to look into it. That's the first reason why this question is really important. The second reason is because the claims of Jesus himself kind of demand consideration, because Jesus was the kind of person that would say, I'm going to come back at the end of time and judge the world. That's kind of weird. how you respond to my words have eternal consequences. Also kind of strange if that's not true. I am the way and the truth and the life, and there's no one can get to the Father except through me. That's odd. His claims were huge. Now, many people throughout history have made claims that maybe are similar. But Jesus is actually the only person that convinced a lot of people that he wasn't lying about it. And the movement is what it is for today. So we need to look into it. Is the Bible reliable? I'll split it up into two things. The first thing is going to be a lot more. The second one's going to be less. So don't freak out when we get to it. Can you trust it historically? And then can you trust it personally? So historically and then personally. So read with me in Luke 1, and then I'm going to skip to Luke 24 if you want to flip over. It's the very last chapter of Luke. So Luke chapter 1, starting in verse 1. Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile a narrative of the things that have been accomplished among us, just as those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word have delivered them to us, it seemed good to me also, having followed all things closely for some time past, to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, that you may have certainty concerning the things that you have been taught. And then Luke 24, when I get there, starting in verse 13. That very day, two of them were going to a village named Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they were talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing together, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What is this conversation that you're holding with each other as you walk?" And they stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, named Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" And he said to them, "What things?" And they said to him, "Concerning Jesus of Nazareth, a man who is a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and rulers delivered him up to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it's now the third day since these things happened. Moreover, some of the women of our company amazed us. They were at the tomb early in the morning, and when they did not find his body, they came back saying they had even seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. And he said to them, O foolish ones and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. So they drew near to the village to which they were going. He acted as if he were going farther. But they urged him strongly, saying, Stay with us, for it's toward evening, and the day is now spent. So he went in to stay with them. And when he was at table with them, he took the bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. And they said to each other, Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road, while he opened to us the scriptures? All right. So, Luke, the book of Luke. We know that Luke was a doctor, meaning he very well was a very meticulous man, because most doctors are. And even back in this day, it would be the same thing. And he even says in verse 2 that many people ahead of him have already compiled narratives about Jesus' life from eyewitness accounts. He says that he's done the same. And what's interesting, you got to pause at that and say, all of human history is actually largely built on eyewitness accounts. Even our legal system is largely based on eyewitness testimony. Yes, there are issues with eyewitness testimony, but this is how we build and rework the past. This is how we do this all over the world. And he says in verse 3, in English, it says that he followed all these things closely. And in Greek, I mean, this is a great translation, but it really means that he examined it intently a lot. There's a word in it that almost has this like wandering around effect. Like he's been wandering around examining eyewitness accounts of Jesus's life very intently, very meticulously, so that this person named Theophilus can have certainty, can have stability about the things that he had heard. Because apparently Theophilus was struggling to believe some of the things about Jesus's life. And so then Luke records this account for him. Another thing about the book of Luke, which is interesting, is that second to the book of Hebrews, which is another New Testament book written in Greek, second to that book, Luke has the most sophisticated Greek in the entire Bible. So dude knows how to write. He's smart. It's very, very put together very well in a very meticulous way. And then Luke claims himself that he's gone about and done this in a meticulous fashion. So here's an objection, though. Here's a question that we could ask. What if they got their facts wrong? Like, maybe they were well-meaning, but what if they got stuff wrong? Well, in a day without the internet, in a day without easy access to books and maps, like, you can't Google anything. you can't Wikipedia anything. There's no computers. We'd expect the biblical writers, if they haven't actually gotten eyewitness testimony or they haven't been to a certain place, we'd expect them to get a ton of details wrong all the time, all over the place. And what's interesting about the biblical documents is that they don't get details wrong. the details in the Bible are too accurate to be considered falsified or wrong. Two quick examples. They get name popularities and patterns right. Name popularities and patterns. So people have done some very nerdy statistics and figured out the most popular names and the certain patterns of people that lived in the first century in this time. And you know, popularity and patterns of names is totally dependent on when and where you're born. Like a very popular name here for a male might be Isaiah, or, you know, Maria is a good popular female name. I mean, maybe if you're from Nashville, Tennessee, like me, you know, Cletus and Billie Jean, you know, the popular names. I don't know. And then depending on when you're born, Kimmy, and then she's giving me a look. Depending on when you're born, that changes as well. And then you have patterns, right? So like my name is Brooks Harwood, meaning I'm Brooks, son of somebody named Harwood, typically a male, who's my father, typically, right? And then I have a middle name, Pritchard, that comes from my grandmother's maiden name. So like, there's a pattern that we follow that's different depending upon when you're born and where you're born. what we see, especially in the Gospels and Acts, they get all the names right in the right ways with the right frequencies and the right patterns all over the place. Some quick examples of it would be like they mention Simon of Cyrene, so an area that this person named Simon is from, Simon son of John, Simon the Tanner, meaning the job that this particular Simon had, Mary Magdalene, meaning she's from an area called Magdala, and then Jesus of Nazareth as well. These are patterns that we can actually test to see, are they accurate? Are these the types of names you would expect? I can't go into it here, but if you want to talk to me more about it, what's really fascinating is they've compared the frequency of names that show up in the Bible compared to the frequency of names that show up in every other ancient document we have in that time, and they completely match. As in, the top 9 male names you find in the Bible are the top 9 male names that you find outside of the Bible. Top 9 female names, top 9 female names. It's the same, depending upon whether you're looking in the Bible or outside of it. And the statistics get really eerily close. Again, if you don't have internet, you don't have any access to these types of things, unless you've been there, unless you're getting real data, you wouldn't get these things right at all. They get places right. So again, no maps. Think how hard it is for us to even figure out where something is, and you can Google map it really fast. You're like, I don't know, what is that, southwest? What direction is that? So in this time, though, what's interesting, the New Testament alone, we're not even talking about the Old Testament, mentions 63 places, 63 cities from 12 different regions all over the place. And they name every place right, with the directionality right, in the right order, in the right area that they're in. So either the biblical writers have been there, or they talked to people that did. There's no other option for it. Then we're not going to go into it, but they get the plants right. So any plants that they mention, they get religious customs, architecture, coins, social circles, political leaders, clothing designs, jobs, eating habits, and more all accurately. So they get these details right, which you would not get right unless they're gaining real data. What's also interesting to add to all of this is that even non-Christian sources, as in non-Christian historians, agree with the basic contours of what the Christian documents say. Okay, so people like Tacitus, a Roman historian, Pliny, who's the governor in Asia Minor, Josephus, is a Jewish historian. Name your child Josephus. See how far they get. The Talmud, which is Jewish rabbinic writings. So these four that I just mentioned, these are non-Christian sources. What I'm about to read to you does not come from the Bible, right? It comes from these sources in this time. This is what you learn. Jesus was born in Bethlehem to unmarried parents, started a religious movement as a great teacher and a miracle worker, was seen by many as the Messiah and as a king, was crucified under a governor named Pontius Pilate between 26 and 36 AD on the eve of a Passover, that many of his followers claimed to see him physically alive from the dead, and that the early church worshiped Jesus as a god. That all comes from these non-Christian sources, and I can give you copies of them if you'd like, if you want. It's interesting, the details of the Bible and the documents are too accurate, and they align too much even with non-Christian sources to say that they got their facts wrong. They didn't get their facts wrong. What if the biblical documents changed over time? So what if, like, there's been a lot of copies, right? This is not the, you know, original Bible. What if they changed? Like, what do we make of that? I'm glad you asked. So in 1947, at that point in time, the oldest version of the book of Isaiah, an Old Testament book, that we had came from 920 AD, which is about 1,600 years after the original would have been written. So very, very long. So up to 1947, that's the oldest one we had. Well, in 1947, caves were found called Qumran, an area in Palestine, where hundreds of Old Testament documents were found. And in cave one, they found a near complete copy, like 99.9% near complete copy of Isaiah from the year 125 BC, nearly 1,000 years older than the original copy or the previous copy that we had access to. And what do they find? No changes between the two at all. Now, what kind of changes were actually there? Spelling errors, word order, you know, they might have articles different, like a "the" is missing in one where it's there in another. Minor corrections, nothing different substantially at all for 1,000 years. Meaning, this is physical proof that we have copied, or humans have copied, the Bible without changing it, or at least without feeling at liberty to change it. You can actually go online and look at a comparison of both of them too, if you want that link, or you can go fly to the Israel Museum and go see the physical copy for yourself. And you can take me if you want, because I want to go. On top of all this, the sheer number of the biblical documents that we have and how old those documents are adds so much weight to this. Okay, so like Plato, you've heard of him. Like some of his works, we have 8 copies of about 1,300 years after he would have written them. Caesar's Gallic Wars, we have 10 copies, 950 years after the original. Homer's Iliad, there's 600 copies of that, and that's actually really rare. This is unheard of in any ancient document that you have 600 of it. It's about 400 years after the original. How many Greek New Testament documents do we have? We have over 5,500 documents within 30 to 150 years of the original. Then, on top of all that, you have translations in Coptic, Syriac, Gothic, Ethiopic, Armenian, and others, up to 24,000 different copies. And then in the Old Testament, so we've been talking about the New, we have about 40,000 copies, at least 1,000 of them coming before the first century. The point of all this is to say is the more copies you have in more geographically diverse areas in different languages gives you more data to see how much they've changed, how much difference there is amongst them. And again, the variations are nil. They're 99% the same. The changes are spelling, word order. Sometimes a line is repeated. So you copy a line and then you accidentally repeat it again. That is a difference. And there are many of those, but not consequential ones. So this is physical proof that the Bible can be copied and the copyist didn't feel at liberty to change it. So, okay. Yeah, they didn't get their facts wrong. Maybe the copyist didn't change it. But what if the copies that were made were already legends to begin with? Like, what if it was already legendary material? That's also a really good question. Atheistic and Jewish scholars, so not even just Christian scholars, two of which you can look into are Shay Cohen, Jewish scholar, and then Bart Ehrman, an atheistic scholar. They say that the Gospels were written no more than 35 to 60 years after the time of Jesus. 35 years would be Mark, and then Luke and Matthew are in between. 60 years would be John. Paul's letters were between 15 and 20 years after the time of Jesus.
As Tim Keller says, a pastor in New York, he says, this means that the biblical accounts of Jesus' life were circulating within the lifetime of hundreds who've been present at the events of his ministry. But myths and legends take hundreds of years to develop, especially if you're in a different place. So what we see here, remember I just, you know, read off all the how many documents we have for how close we have them to the time of the actual events.
The time of Jesus' life and the time of the documents that we have, there's simply not enough time for legends and myths to form in between those, especially not enough time for legends and myths to start overriding all the facts of Jesus' life. There just isn't enough time for this to happen. So it's not legendary. It's not myths. But last thing, last objection. What if the Bible was falsely made by religious leaders in order to build their movement? So this is the first three are kind of like, what if they made mistakes? And this one's like, what if they purposely made some mistakes, right? To build their movement, to actually do something in this religious bend. Well, if you are fabricating a religious movement, the wise thing to do is don't put things in your text, whatever those are, that are counterproductive to your movement. Don't put things in your text that don't help you grow, don't help you gain power. And what you see in the biblical text is that there are tons of counterproductive things within them that they should have edited out unless they really happened. So what are some examples of that? If you're fabricating a religious movement, you'd paint your key leaders in the best light as possible. If you've ever read the book of Genesis, the patriarchs in it, meaning the foundation of the faith, they're kind of awful people. And it's just plain. It's just there for you to read and see. King David was a murderer and an adulterer. The prophet Elijah was depressed and wanted God to kill him, like he had suicidal desires. The prophet Jonah was a racist and an elitist. And he's like this prophet that's in the Bible. Jesus' core disciples weren't much better. Like, they're always arguing. Many of the time, they actually doubt Jesus to his face. At one point, they doubt things so much that they can't actually participate in the healing that's going on at that time. And then Paul, he wasn't an original leader of Jesus, but he was a former terrorist. And then he's right there. And that's public. It's public knowledge. If you're a key leader and you're trying to fabricate this movement, you'd edit this stuff out. You don't want this circulating. If you're fabricating a religious movement, you'd paint the leader, not just the leaders, the leader in the best light. Jesus isn't always painted in the best light, though. Like, in a day when family meant everything, there's a place in Mark that says that Jesus' immediate family thought he was crazy. They thought he was out of his mind. This would not be helpful to your movement. In the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus asked God if he can get another way out. He doesn't want to die on the cross. On the cross, Jesus cries out that God had abandoned him. The cross itself is one of the most shameful deaths that anyone in the ancient world could have gone through. Like, you were seen as the worst criminal possible. If you're making this up, you wouldn't want this there. Another thing, if you're making up this religious movement, you would mark the biggest event of that movement with eyewitnesses that people actually wanted to hear. And in the first century, women's testimony wasn't seen as accurate in courts. But guess what? The Bible, over and over again, says, and you even heard it in Luke 24, that women were the first eyewitnesses to Jesus' supposed resurrection. If you're making this up, why don't you put some prominent men in there to see Jesus resurrect from the dead? Why don't you even put some of his enemies in there? You know, they changed their mind. You know, this would be wise. But the things that you see that are put in the Bible, they're not helpful to its movement, but they're there because they didn't feel at liberty to leave it out. They didn't feel at liberty to change it because maybe this is really how it happened. We could say more about archaeology, oral cultural memory. It's interesting. Writing practices, Old Testament and New Testament lists. But you get the point. You can trust the Bible historically. You can. But can you trust it personally? This one's a little shorter. But can you trust it personally? I've told this story before, but it's a great one. I'm going to tell it again. I think it's great. We'll see. So years ago, I realized that I had some deep allergy issues. I still do actually have allergy issues. They're not as bad. But I ended up getting one of those allergy tests where they prick you with like 40 different things and you swell up and, you know, they measure them. Well, I thought our insurance covered that. I just never saw a bill. I saw a copay, never saw a bill. About 2 years later, I start getting these really, really weird phone calls from this automated service that was not saying anything about what it was or who it was. And I was like, this is stupid. I'm not answering this thing. So I never called them back and I always let it go to my voicemail. And finally, like the umpteenth time this happened, I finally call. And they're like, Mr. Harwood, actually, yeah, we're glad you called. I forget what they actually called themselves, but what they were was they were loan sharks. And the bill to my allergy test never got sent to my house, never got notified. The doctors they put the wrong address on there. So I never saw this bill. A loan shark bought up my debt and then started adding interest to it. And at that point, I owed $700. And we did not have $700 at all. So we're trying to figure out how we're going to pay for this bill. And a student at the time, because I worked at Vanderbilt with RUF, with his ministry as an intern, his family, who I'd never met, sent me and Meredith a letter. And in that letter, they said, look, we love y'all. We haven't met you yet. We appreciate you being there for our son. We hope you can use this in any way that you see fit. They didn't know what kind of bill that we had. It was a check for $700. The bill was like $690. So I got $10 out of it, which is kind of sad. Okay, so that was great. What if I never cash that check, though? Like, the check is useless unless I cash it, unless I actually get the money out of it. Like, it does me no good. It wouldn't have helped me. I tell this story because many of you might be convinced that the Bible is historically true. Or you might be possibly convinced it's historically true. You're curious about it being historically true. But you don't want to apply it to you personally yet. Like, you don't want to cash in the check yet. But if you don't apply it personally, then it just stays ink on a page. It just stays far away from you. Like, it has to be applied for it to even do anything in your life. And we might not do that for a billion reasons. We might not apply it to our lives for so many reasons. One, I think one reason we don't apply it personally to us is we actually misunderstand some of the things the Bible teaches. So you see in Luke 24, if you want to flip there, that's where we're ending on, but just some of the examples of this. Jesus is walking with two people down a long road that's 7 miles long called Emmaus. It's actually the church 7 mile road is named after this. And he asks them, what's going on? What are you talking about? And they say, you know, don't you know Jesus of Nazareth? This mighty prophet and word and deed was killed. We thought he was going to save Israel, but clearly he didn't because he's dead. some women that we are friends with saw the tomb being empty. We don't know where he is. The important point here is that they've misunderstood what Jesus' ministry was about. See, people in that day, in the first century, thought that the Messiah was going to be somebody who was a military leader, who was going to overthrow Roman oppression, because the Jews at this time were oppressed by the Romans. What they didn't realize is that Jesus actually wasn't going to free them from oppression from Rome, but his goal was to free them from oppression from their sin. They misunderstood this, though. Some of you have a hard time personally accepting the Bible because you misunderstand some of the things it teaches about slavery or polygamy or war or science or salvation or whatever else. All I want to ask is it possible that the Bible doesn't teach what you think it does on the topic that is really difficult for you to accept? Like, it might not teach that. So I would encourage you, just don't ditch the Bible just because it might not be what you think it's saying, or might not say what you think it's saying. So we don't apply it personally because of that reason. I think another reason, though, you might not rely on the Bible personally is you don't want it to actually change your life. Like, you actually don't want it to have effect on your life. You notice that in verse 27, Jesus at this point starts showing them that the whole Bible is about him. It says that he uses the law, Moses and the prophets. It's a short term for the Old Testament, so the Bible of that day. He says that all of this was about him. And then when he's actually eating with them, in verse 32, they said, "Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road, while he opened to us the scriptures?" The point is their hearts began to change when they realized that the Bible was about Jesus. And honestly, I think for most of us, we just actually don't want him to change us. Like, I think when the rubber meets the road, we just don't want him to change us. Like, if your heart starts to burn for him, he might actually, I don't know, change some of your political views. You know, if you actually start following him, he might change some of your views about sexuality. He might change some of your money use practices, how you spend money, how you spend time, how you think about your skills and your gifts. Like, if he's actually who he says he is, then he might actually start challenging you a little bit on stuff that you don't want challenged. Like, you might actually start having to interact with people who annoy you. or you might have to forgive somebody who's really hurt you, because this is who Jesus is. Like, if we're really honest, we prefer a buffet-style form of religion, a buffet-style version of Christianity, meaning I will listen to the things that I like. I will not listen to things that I don't like. The question is, are you actually interacting with a real person then? Like, I'm married to Meredith. If I don't listen to the things that she says because I don't like them, and I only listen to the things she says that I happen to like, you'd be like, yeah, you don't have a good relationship at all with your wife. If the God you're listening to never challenges you, maybe he's not the real God. Maybe he's just a God of your own making. Like, maybe he's a God made in your image that you actually, you know, never receive pushback from. So you should actually expect that this kind of God is going to change you. Let Jesus change you. This very last thing, you might not rely on the Bible personally because you actually just don't see that it's about Jesus. Like, these people on this road didn't start freaking out until they realized that the whole Bible was actually about him all along. But when they noticed it, when they saw that it was all about Jesus, they wanted more of Jesus. It said, "Did not our hearts burn within us?" They actually wanted him to stay. They're like, "Please stay with us. We really want to eat with you tonight. Like, we really want to talk more." if the Bible is all about commands, then you better get your life right. I mean, if the Bible is only history, has no impact on us today, then what's the point of us even being here and talking about it? You know, if the Bible is only about your salvation, then why should you even care once you're saved about how you live? Anything else in the other, anything in between. But if the Bible is about God planting his feet on this earth through Jesus to fix everything, your heart might start to burn. It might start to want him. Like, if the Bible is about God coming to earth in Jesus to actually take our judgment onto himself, you might actually start to love him. Like, if it's about Jesus uniting you to people that you never would be united to otherwise because of the Holy Spirit, you get to call each other family, but you're not alone anymore, you might start to thank him, you know? If you realize that the whole Bible is about Jesus actually enlisting you to do something about the brokenness of this world, you might start getting, like, overjoyed and pumped that he's done that for you. Like, your heart might burn. Sophie is really cute. I don't have to say that twice. She is. She's just now started to say dada, and it's awesome. The other day I plopped her down. We've bought magnets to put on the fridge for her to play with. So we're there. We're officially parents. She's got all her little magnets that she plays with. And she's sitting there and she's playing with it. And I'm making coffee. And she's making noise, and she kind of gets quiet. And I turn around to look at her, and she's just drilling me with her eyes. And y'all, she's fixated on me in this moment. She wants to see me. She wants me to pay attention to her. And honestly, my heart just starts to burn with love for her. Like, that's what starts happening to me when I see that. If you realize that the God of the Bible is that way with you, that he fixates on you, that he actually focuses on you, that he wants to do good in your life, that he wants you to fixate your life back on him, your heart might start to burn with love for him. So the Bible, you can trust it historically, but you can also trust it personally. Because it's all about Jesus, but Jesus is all about fixating on you so that you would fixate on him. Pray with me. Father, thank you for the Bible, and thank you that you've given us things that we can read and discuss and learn. And I just pray now that whatever truth you have for us, that you'd press it upon us, you'd help us to wrestle with it and to change because of it. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Y'all please stand.
Sorry.